So welcome everybody to our July open coaching and support call for NEPT. I'm excited to be here to support you in whatever ways you need support, whether it be with a particular client challenge, whether it be particular content that you're working through, or just in general, if it's your own challenge, that's another option as well, or marketing and, you know, positioning and coaching issues. So we'll just, it's a very small group tonight. I bet everybody's outside enjoying the warmth of the summer. This happens in the summer all the time. I keep saying I'm just going to not have calls in the summer and we're just going to have schools out for summer, you know, because this happens in all of our programs once it hits the warm months and people are not around. And I thought it would be different this year because of the COVID and the quarantine. And I have to ask you, Michelle, what is going on behind you? Because I keep seeing the ocean.
Oh, this is my green screen, but I haven't put it up.
I'll put it up. It's just off to one side.
I'll put it up.
It actually looks really good. I've never been.
It is gorgeous. So I'll put it up. But I had a quick question. I have a client that I've been working with who was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, and she decided to go off for a while, you know, and do her own thing, you know. And then she recently came back to me after about 2 years.
Oh boy.
And she wanted to know about whether removing half of the thyroid, what kind of effect that would have. And she wants to start preparing to have a baby. So I think I know what your answer is, but I said I would defer to the expert.
Let me ask you this first. Is she already doing all the autoimmune things that we know she needs to do?
No.
No. Okay. So let's remove half your thyroid because I don't really want to go gluten-free. And let's remove half my thyroid because I really rather not get the toxic stuff out of my life. Mm-hmm. So it's like, It's so bizarre to me that people have grown up in a medical system where they entertain the idea of losing parts of their body before they entertain the idea of losing parts of their diet. You know what I mean? It's crazy. So losing part of your thyroid, it becomes an issue, right? I don't care if it's the whole or the half. I mean, if it's cancerous and it's spreading, you want to get rid of it. That's a different situation than an autoimmune condition, which you can get it under control. If it's so large that it's pressing off the airway and you can't speak and you can't breathe very well, yeah, that's a time to do it. So there's a time and a place for surgery. But for convenience sake, it's not convenient. And then they got to mess with, you know, now you have part of a thyroid that's producing hormone and part that's not. I think it's probably even harder to get the levels managed than if they took the whole thing out. Really? You know, because when it's gone, then they just, okay, there's nothing to get in the way, right? We don't give you this level and then find out, oh, so this week the thyroid's producing more than it did last week and the levels are all off or less. So I think that, you know, the thing that she needs to look at is, why does she want to get half of it out, right? And then the other part is, if you do, then there's this constant battle of maintaining. It's not like you cut it out and the other half takes over for it, especially if he's already got an autoimmune condition, right? It's not working properly in the first place. You can't take it out and go, oh yeah, the other half will take up. I'm not like a snake or a worm where you cut the part off and it grows back. It doesn't work that way, you know? So I would be really cautioning her to consider the kinds of diet lifestyle things, you know, can help her and put her in remission rather quickly. Blood sugar balance, microbiome balance, right? The toxic stuff, looking for heavy metals and looking for any hidden occult viruses, stress management, right? Mindfulness practice. That's a huge one, right? Yeah. And those things we know make a difference. Mm-hmm. And they're not the things that Western medicine talks to them about much. And those are inconvenient. But let me tell you, somebody opening my neck and taking out a gland and having to deal with all the other stuff that's around it, those important vessels, and risking possibly they nick a vessel or a nerve. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much risk when it comes to surgery, let alone the anesthetic and like,
I think she's dealing with a lot of pressure from her family and, you know, their concern about her health and well-being. And I asked her, you know, has it grown? And she said, no. And but she said that they're concerned and they want to make sure that it's not cancerous. And so,
well, have they done it? Is it a hot nodule? Have they done the scans to see? Because you can do a scan and see if it's cancerous or not.
What kind of scan is that?
Well, it involves radioactive iodine, but mm-hmm. it's still less invasive than cutting it out. Right. And they can look for a hot nodule. If it's nodules, how many nodules are there? How big are they? They can measure them and then they can measure them again in three months and 6 months, mm-hmm. right? To see, are they growing? Are they shrinking? I typically see when we start to put people on a protocol to reverse an autoimmune disease that those nodules start to shrink, right? Mm-hmm. And some people, they completely go away. Mm-hmm. So, unless it is cancerous, but you should have that. They can rule that out without having to go in and take it out. And if you want to have a really good conversation about the risks of thyroid surgery, talk to Jenny Noland. She's in our program. She just got certified back in the fall and she had the surgery done. Mm-hmm. And it was horrific. And she regrets that she didn't know what she knows now, back mm-hmm. then, to have avoided it.
Does she have anything where she's talked about it that I could leave?
She did, actually. I wonder if it's posted. She did a beautiful case presentation for us during one of the calls last year. So I don't know if it's posted on there, but let me think if I can remember when. It was before, was probably late last year. So, because it was right around the time that everybody was getting certified and she was going through her certification. So maybe October through December of last year.
Jenny Noland.
And then she also did a vital health topic recently. Mm-hmm. Right? And you can find that. Just go on the site. The new page I set up on the Unstoppable Health site, click it, NEPT. And on that page, I actually have a link directly to the vital health topic calls. So you can just click there and scroll back. And I think the vital health talk that she did earlier this year on thyroid, and she did talk about her story with that.
But that's not accessible by somebody who's not in the program, though. It's not like the YouTube link or anything.
No. You wouldn't share it. That would be something you could watch. And then, maybe I wouldn't share it with your client. Well, the health topic, you probably could. You could just grab the MP3 link or whatever and
I didn't know if Jenny perhaps had something on her web.
Well, if you go to her, I don't know what her website is, Wellness with Jenny or something like that. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can find it. But she has a lot of stuff on her site. Let's see. And then she specializes in working with thyroid patients since then. Jenny, let me just see. Jenny Noland. Jenny Noland, I'm just going to do Jenny Noland thyroid, functional nutritionist, Eugene, Oregon. Here we go. JennyNoland.com. There we go. That was
How
easy.
How do you spell her last name?
I'll put it in the chat. Noland. There we go. And I'm sure she has her story on her site and she does a lot of education, community education stuff. So join our mailing list, meet Jenny, the root cause detective. Let's see if she has an about page. Let's see, my journey. Yeah, she tells her story there. Yep. Yeah, go check her out. Because that's what she, that's what she went through. And it was tough. And they didn't know what was wrong. And they just went in there and opened her up and found out it was cancerous. And then they botched the surgery and she was really sick for a really long time. Wow. Right. It's supposed to be a simple surgery, right?
Mm-hmm. They always are. But
they always are, right? Unless you die from it. I mean, even colonoscopies, Pam Dibbern's mom died under a colonoscopy because they messed up and they nicked in her intestine burst and so they fill you up with CO2 or air during that, and that got into her bloodstream and heart attack during the procedure. Mm-hmm. So, even simple things like that, you go in and, routine stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
as you said, for us in this society, we think it's extreme to use herbs, but it's not extreme to remove your uterus or anything like
right.
that. And I don't know right. the logic. And I dealt with another young lady who was going to do the hysterectomy. And I said, my God, you're removing your womb. And she's like, oh, but it'll fix the problem. And I was like, oh, geez.
It's not going to fix. That's the thing. They give them that bad information that it's going to fix the problem. It's not fixing the problem.
I said, it's just going to create bigger problems.
Bigger problems.
It's not addressing the underlying issues that are still going to be there. And now you're going to have complicated issue plus emotional, mental, psychological issues.
How old is she? Is she young?
Yeah, she's only about in her 30s, her late 30s. She's like, well, I don't want any children anymore. So I'm like, that's not the point.
That's not the point. And they, what they don't get, and this is where our education comes in so handy, is that they don't get that the uterus just doesn't decide, or the ovaries don't just decide to go south without any provocation. There's usually some reason, and it's going to be some other hormonal reason usually, right? It's going to be, it'll be a thyroid issue. Thyroid and uterine problems are directly related. It's an imbalance in hormones, like, you know, the estrogen progesterone imbalance.
Well, right? I was talking to her about her blood sugar regulation for two years prior to this. You know, I had I told her to get the Freestyle Libre. I kept asking her to check her blood glucose. And she's like, I've got it under control, Michelle. I've got it under control, Michelle. And then all of a sudden I called just to check in on her, how she's doing. She's like, oh yeah, I'm going to go have a hysterectomy next week. I was like, what? You know? And I was like, oh my God, if you had just listened to me 2 years ago when I was telling you, you know, because I'm sure the major part of it was blood sugar dysregulation, and it hasn't gone anywhere.
So do you do education on this? Like, and I've stopped being a wuss about this. I've really stopped being a, well, it'd be a good idea if you get that under control.
No, I like, do education.
You're going to die if you don't get this under control.
Yeah. I am very blunt with people.
Yeah, you are. I can imagine being wussy about it.
You know, I mean, there's time for the mama-san, and then there's time for, are you insane? And I literally told her that. I said, you know, if that's what you want to do, then go ahead, but don't expect me to say that it's the best thing for you. I will.
You got to tell them the downsides too, right? Here's the downsides, and tell them stories. The more stories you can collect about people who did the hysterectomy, it didn't help, and then their health went even further south.
Yeah.
Or like with Jenny with the thyroid, and then she almost died, and you know, and she's still struggling with regulating it because it's difficult.
Yeah,
it's very difficult. Right. And even if it's an autoimmune condition, it doesn't go away. There's still antibodies there that are going to attack remnants of it. There's antibodies that are there that are going to attack someplace else in your body. Right. And autoimmune diseases rarely, if ever, come in singlets. Rarely, if ever. So if you've got one, you better believe there's something else. So is there another part of your body that doesn't feel like it's working real well? Could be autoantibodies. It's really rare for somebody to just have one, because it's an immune system gone haywire. It's not a thyroid problem. It's an immune system gone haywire.
And that's what I keep on impressing upon her, that she's not dealing with a thyroid issue. The thyroid is just, you know,
it's in the way.
It's another victim.
Exactly.
You know, casualty of the war, but it's not the problem.
Absolutely.
So thank you for connecting me with Jenny's information. I'm just
connect with Jenny. I mean, reach out to her. I don't know if she does Facebook. Have you either of you seen her on Facebook? I don't know if I've seen her on Facebook, but reach out to her.
Reach out to her, definitely.
Yeah, her contact information's on her site. Yeah, and you probably can listen to her. Her case study call was really good. Were you on that, Jill? Because you were nodding your head. She did an amazing job with that case study. Right. It was just really, really, really good.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a very riveting story. And the vital was also that way too. It wasn't quite as in depth as her case for us, but it was really, really good. Well done.
Is there a special place for case studies?
Let me show you. Let me see if we can find it real easily. Here we go. Pulled her up. That's her.
I have her. Go to
here, and we go to recordings. Oh, here, right here. Case study calls. I'm pretty sure we put it up as one of the case study calls. Here, we'll go down to 2018. My guess is it was September, October, November, December. So one of those. I'm just guessing at October. Let's see. Well, there's the thyroid. Maybe this is it. No.
So hello and welcome everyone to our all office hours. Well, our Kate with us. And he has a really good approach. What he does is he uses.
All right. So that was on thyroid, but let's go to November. Oh, it might have been sooner because I think she might have gotten certified back in September. Let's see. No, probably not that one. Let's go to September.
Is it one case study per call? Per
well, we do multiple. Ah, here it is. But we do multiples usually for case studies. But when we do a certification, here we go. This is it.
Oh, September 2019.
September, yeah. There it is. And she talked for a long time. It was long. Okay. 31 minutes. So she did a great job.
All right.
Of it.
So take.
All right.
Okay.
So you got that one. And then on Vital. What's my Vital? I had Vital open a little while ago. I guess I don't anymore. Oh, I need that one open for my next call. Sites, Unstoppable. The easy way for you guys to find anything that you have access to on the personal health site is this new cool page that I put together for you, NEPT All Access Personal Programs. And I just made it easy. You know, sometimes it's like go deeper and deeper and deeper to try to find things. I get tired of that. So that
rabbit hole.
Yeah. So it's all organized. See here, it's got steps like, hey, if you want to get your own health together, do these 8 steps first, guide your clients through it. And then I have all the health evaluations, the whole library of scorecards is all on one page. And then I have the education and empowerment and all of these I have on the front page instead of having to go down deep. And then let me see, where's the vital health topics. So you just go one level deep, click on the vital health topics.
I think Jenny's was April 14th.
Oh, thank you. All right. April 14th.
Of 20.
Got it. Sorry. I scrolled down too far. Let's see. Thank you, Valerie. Topic.
Yeah. Thank you.
There you go. Revitalize your thyroid function. And if you feel like that would inspire your client, you know, watch it first, listen to it first, but it's just audio. Oh, it's on. It should have been video. They're supposed to take her slides and put those up too. And they didn't do that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you could just take this link.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our April Vital.
That was Angelica. I'm going to have to get on her case for not putting her slides up because she had really nice slides as I remember. So there, you know, you can look at her slides while you listen. So it's similar. But she had really good slides and it might inspire your client to take some action. Whoops, it's taking its time.
I wonder why. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. But why is it not working? Oh, Chrome, it's my Chrome. Hopefully it doesn't die. Anyway, there you go. So what is that? What kind of a sheet do you have there that you use? Is it? Because I've never been able to get my green screen thing to work so well.
This is just an ordinary green. I bought it from Amazon. It's like a big green sheet. And it's
that's all it is a big green sheet. I have one of those. And then you just pin it to your wall?
Yep.
Looks great. Wow. All right, I'll look into that. I have one of those, but I've not been able to get it to look so good. And it looks real. Looks real. Yeah.
Yeah, and I love all of these different backgrounds that I've been finding.
That's awesome.
Give me something to play with.
And you don't look all, when I do mine, I look all like weirdish. Like if I move, I kind of disappear in parts.
Oh, then you have to play with the lighting.
Okay.
because if it doesn't have the proper lighting, then you get weird shadows and things mm-hmm. of that nature.
Wow, that looks great. I love it. All right. Who else has questions, comments, things you want to discuss? Yeah.
Okay. I just want to thank you, both of you, for that conversation. Because especially with the connection, helping another person connect that their lifestyle is connected to that one little organ. I've been having these conversations with my husband. You know, he has the prostate issue, and he's still in the just cut it out, it'll be done mode, even though he's chosen active surveillance at the moment. But the doctors just see it as, well, you're just putting it off until next year, you know, it's still going to happen kind of thing.
Right.
You know, and so even I understand that the body is a whole system, and that everything that we do and teach is affecting the one organ. And so at the same time, I don't think he's connecting that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? If it was just that simple answer, I'll get off gluten, you know.
Right.
But it's
more than, yeah.
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 I think it's interesting because the way I look at it, in order for someone to take action on what we give them, right? So they come to us, they have all these issues, they have to buy into the fact that diet and lifestyle and thoughts and emotions have an effect on the physical body. So if they can't buy into that, then no matter what we tell them to do in terms of herbs or meditations or foods or whatever, they're not going to believe it's going to work. They're skeptics, right? They just want to cut it out. It's like those out there that are just like, let's just get a COVID vaccine and then we're all safe. Like, really? Seriously? Like, what planet do you live on? I mean, seriously, right? So it's a matter of, like, the education is such a piece. And you said you're a teacher, Jill, right? We just had that conversation. You did. And the education is such a big thing. And if you just go out in the community and you start educating without regards to the fact that you don't have a program to offer yet, or you don't know what you're going to offer them or whatever, just do it from here to there. Like, offering education shifts the perspective, and you never know. I had one guy came to a talk I think it was a $20 talk I gave that somebody rented a chiropractor's office, invited me to speak. And I go in there, and at the beginning of it, this guy comes up to me and goes, look, you have to try to get my friend to listen to you. I've been trying to get him to change his diet. He's on all these medications. The doctor says he's not going to live. He's going to have a stroke. He has this and that, and he won't listen to me. I'm hoping he listens to you. I'm like, okay, you know, it's not up to me, but I can do my part. And I just did my typical, I did a 2-hour talk on the power of the body to heal and how all these influences and how it's getting in the way. And I connected it all. So at the end of the talk, the friend of the guy, you know, that he wanted me to convince, came up to me and said, thank you. And he bought like a, you know, my breakfast book or whatever stupid thing I had to sell at the time. I didn't have anything except some dumb little $7 book of breakfast. Goes away. He has my link to my website. And about 9 months later, he writes to me and he thanks me for saving his life. He thanks me. He says, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have made these changes. I've lost 40 pounds. I'm off all my medications. I've been coming to all your webinars, and everything you've taught me, I'm putting into action. The guy never spent anything more than the $7 for that book and $20. No, he didn't pay the $20 to come to the class. His friend brought him there and paid the $20 for him. Yet there was a huge influence. And so that's why I'm big fan of, let's give a lot of stuff away for free. And yeah, I got to charge because I have to pay the bills. And, you know, there's stuff I have to do with this, but I'm not going to begrudge the tens of thousands, tens and hundreds of thousands even, who are doing free stuff and getting results. So just get it out there. What do you feel passionate about sharing with them in terms of the influence? And just teach and teach and teach without expecting anything in return.
Yeah, and even, and Yes, and thank you for that encouragement, Dr. Rita Marie. And in this conversation, as I get out there, you see, that's my intention thought. I want to help them, as just as I'm not able at the present moment to help my husband connect, that this little organ here has to do with the whole. I want to be able to communicate that with the general public, that the whole equals the little thing, you know, that one organ. And maybe, you know, yes, he does have, he hasn't done the genes test, but he has a brother and a father who had prostate cancer, you know, so you might assume that he's got a gene or two.
The genes have to do with the pathways that are coding, and maybe that he's got the gene that's, you know, he's more likely to take testosterone down to the DHT pathway, the 5 alpha reductase pathway. And when you look at like a Dutch test or whatever, he's likely to go down that way. There is a more predisposition, but it also has to do with diet and lifestyle. Zinc is super important there. EFA balance, GLA, super important there, right? So there's ways that we can intervene even if he has the gene. Nice to know if he has the gene, because it's one way of convincing people to do what you tell them to do. Oh, look at that. You've got that gene where you're a sluggish caffeine metabolizer. Did you know that that same enzyme that metabolizes caffeine metabolizes the 4-hydroxyestrogen, which is the one that contributes to breast and other estrogen-sensitive cancers? So every time you're having your cup of coffee, think of these poor little babies, right? And what you're doing to them by exposing them to this toxic estrogen, you make your decision. So many people decide at that point, like coffee or breasts, you know, well, I want to keep my breasts and, you know, drink my coffee, you know, or get rid of my breasts potentially and have my breasts damaged and drink my coffee. They get to see the choices they make in a different light. And it's up to us to help them not to see the choice between chocolate cake and ice cream and salad. That's the choice they see in front of them. I eat the salad or I eat out. You know, the pizza and ice cream with my friends, right? So they see the pizza and ice cream is a much more enticing choice, right? But when we can help them to see the pathway that this leads them to, and I'm a big fan of teaching people as much as they can tolerate about the biochemistry, about how it works, because it's when they understand that's when they can make the choices, better choices. If they just say, oh, my doctor told me this was bad for me and this is good for me, and then 2 weeks later they go, which one of those did they say was bad and which one did they say was good? They don't even remember, right, let alone why. But you explain them the difference. The lady who said to me, you ruined Cheetos for me. Yay! Because she would just blindly eat them knowing it wasn't a good food, but she would just eat it until we went through the pathways of how those fats in that food were going to affect her inflammatory pathway, that could influence her breasts, which she had already had breast cancer, that it could influence her hormone expression. She didn't have to have willpower to avoid the Cheetos anymore. She just looked at them and thought all that stuff danced in her head and like, phew. Not worth it, right? And that's where the education comes in. The more we can educate them so they make the choices. And I don't care if you ruin Cheetos for them and you ruin a lot of foods for them, right? And if they have nightmares about these little molecules, you know, free radicals running around their system and decide the next day that they're going to give up their, you know, fried food because they don't want that, all the more, you know, you don't want to do it from fear. But you want to give them enough education that they can make good decisions, because most people don't have that. They don't see it. Oh yeah, just cut my uterus out.
So is the, you know, I've listened to some of the hormone things, but is there anything within the program that specifically talks about the prostate?
I would say the reproductive module.
I think that I looked on Vital Health
I don't think I've ever done it. You know, most of our clients and most of our audience are women, right?
I know.
So maybe I should do a prostate thing that they can share with their partners,
Yeah, because, you know, well, several things, you know, the society says that by the time, you know, person gets older, that, you know, like 80% of the men are going to have this problem, right? That's one thing, you know. Then also, you know, this choice of active surveillance, you know, is just a temporary stopgap, you know. I asked the surgeon, I said, have you looked at, do you ever look at hormones? You know, do you know what a Dutch test is? He didn't. I said, once you take the prostate out, do you have to take anything? Do you have them take anything at all? Medications, whatever? Oh, no. Not at all, I'm thinking.
You have them look at what was the root cause and why did their prostate get cancer in the first place, and can we remove those things? No. That's why people have cancer in one place and then they get cancer in another place and then they get cancer in another place.
Yeah.
And they think they're independent processes.
That's what I think. That's what I think is going on, you know, is separating, because that's what we've been taught to think. It's a separate little entity within this whole system, you know, that just has its own little thing it's running itself by.
This quirky thing that somehow was made to get cancer after 60 years.
Yeah.
But no, does it have to do with the environment?
That's the most dangerous part about it, that they make it seem as if it's intrinsic to the prostate, that if you have a prostate, it's just a matter of time. It's not even you may get it like the other cancers. It's if you have a prostate, you will get it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, the whole thing like with the breast cancer and the genetics. So if you have this gene, they're saying, get your breasts out before it turns into cancer. But that same gene can predispose to brain cancer too. So why don't you take my brain while you're at it? Right? It doesn't make sense. But what causes it to go haywire, right? Do we always have control? No. I mean, I'm just talking to one person today. I won't name names, but she had pellets. She's been using pellets, estrogen pellets. And, you know, they put the pellets in and then and I'm like, you got to get off those pellets. And she says, well, they just put them in 6 weeks ago. And did they do a Dutch test? Do we know what your metabolites are? Do we know any of this stuff? No. So she's got estrogen and testosterone pellets. And she was found out she has breast cancer. It's estrogen-sensitive breast cancer. Mm. And you can't take them out. So she's only 6 weeks. Now she's got these high levels of estrogen in her system that aren't going to go away until they wear out 6 months later. Because you can't take them out once they're in.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm looking at her Dutch test is coming back soon, and we're going to see if she has high testosterone that's converting, then we can at least intervene with, let's do a bunch of aromatase inhibitors so she doesn't have the testosterone converting. Does she have enough progesterone? Can we really push up her progesterone to start to protect her? You know, what else is going on? Because they're saying, well, take tamoxifen until it's out of your system. So it's just adding another layer to the process, you know, when they shouldn't have been putting those damn things in there in the first place. And she kept asking them, are you sure this is okay? Oh yeah, it's fine. You're going to feel like $1 million with
these. Perfectly safe.
Perfectly safe. I'm dreading seeing what her Dutch test looks like, because she took the sample like 2 weeks after putting them in, which is when the levels are going to be the highest.
Yeah, I had a client that I was seeking to get her to do a Dutch test. She ended up at a doctor's office doing the pellets and felt better. So now she's thinking in her head, oh, that's all fixed now.
Right. Yeah, Allison did a good presentation last year. You might have heard her at Shine on the you know, she talked really fast because she only had 15 minutes and she was like, blah, 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 blah. But the thing was that she started testing these people who she inherited patients from a doctor who was doing pellets, and she retired. So she's like, oh, we'll put pellets in these people. Now I've got this whole education thing as to why they shouldn't have pellets. And so she started doing research and gathering numbers. And these people were like off the charts, crazy levels of estrogen that should never have been there.
Are you still scheduled for live Shine?
No, we're going to go virtual. I know. I really want to do it live.
But I don't trust the environment. We have a lot of money invested in it. And if they say, oh, well, you can get it, you can do it, but you're only allowed 30 people in the room or whatever, I can lose a ton of money. Like if we just cancel it in general, we can lose $45,000 we're committed to. So we're having them move us to the following year. And then we're going to just do the same 3-day event that we were going to do live. We're going to do online. Same topic.
What's the theme this year?
Autoimmune.
Okay. Have you heard of Tony Robbins, his weekend this weekend? He's doing Zoom for 3 days with 25,000 people. They had to expand the Zoom platform just to accommodate him.
Oh my God.
Wow.
People are getting used to it.
Never been done before.
You know, it's interesting because we did Shine Online a couple of weeks ago, or about a month ago, and we planned that even before the COVID thing. It wasn't because of that. It was because, well, we moved from having our SIV thing every year to doing it online, and we got more sales and we made more money and we reached more people. So we said, well, why do that? It's so much work to do a live event. So we started doing that, and I thought, well, what happened? I don't want to give up my Shine conference. I always want to do it live, but I want to do a second one and another part of the year and just see how it goes, right? And see if ever anything happened that I couldn't do it live, or could I? Well, we did this, the Shine Online, and we had better everything than we had in person. Yeah, because we had 400 people signed up, 450, almost 500 people signed up for it. And we sold tickets up cheap, like $49, then $99. And a lot of people got them for free. But we went into it in the black. We went into it with a profit margin already. So even if we didn't have any luck with, you know, selling people into the program or anything, no big deal. We had fun and we made $40,000.
You do a training on how to do that? Like what platforms you use and
yeah,
and
we can do a training on that. It's not hard at all. Yeah, I mean, it was similar to what we did for the NEPT retreat, only on a larger scale. There's an issue with Zoom that I really don't like. We wanted to do breakout rooms. So, but with Zoom, if there's 200 people, you can do 50 breakout rooms, which means 4 to a breakout room, which is a nice little cozy group. If there's 500 people, you can do, 50 breakout rooms. We're like, excuse me? Did I read that backwards? No, it's because it's bandwidth or something. So if we were to just do breakouts within the room of 500, we had to have breakouts of like 100 people. Like, that's not, you know, not 100 people, 25 people. You can't do a breakout with 25 people. It's crazy. So what we had to do was, we have 5 Zoom accounts because we have people on the team that use them. We had to take two of our accounts and make those accounts be breakout rooms and only have 200. We were going to do a third one, but you know, 450 people signed up, but not all showed up. So we had less than 400. So we broke up. Everybody had to leave the Zoom room. We had to go to a different Zoom room. They were assigned to breakout room A or B. And then when they got there, we had to have a person assigned there that then broke them up into breakout rooms there so that we could have 4 people per. It was a lot of work, but we figured it out. We've got it all figured out. And so, yeah, we could do that, share that.
Mm-hmm. It was great, Marie.
Yeah, and it was fun. People got to know each other. They were exchanging phone numbers and wanting to keep in touch. So that's what we wanted. We wanted that building of a community, right? Because that's what we love about getting there in person. Yeah, we couldn't do hugs, but you know, you were at the retreat. It was really, it was nice in spite of the fact that it wasn't in person. It was still nice. You know, not as nice, but especially not for that, because we didn't get to eat Joe's food. That's my favorite part. Oh,
no
Ginger,
fun with virtual
hello.
Food.
Ginger just joined us. What?
Virtual food just isn't the same, huh?
No, you gotta make it yourself, right? We tried to do that.
We did lunch. You make it and give us the tasties.
Well, when's Taste Division coming, right? That's the future of this stuff. We see people, we hear people. Years ago we thought that was impossible. I bet in 20 years we'll be tasting and smelling too. It's all vibration, right? We just have to figure out how to get that vibration. I don't know how to do it. I'm not a, you know, physicist or whatever, but I mean, it seems like it's logically capable of doing it. I don't know.
That and beam me up, Scotty.
I know. I was just thinking that gee, that sounds a little scary. Like having yourself dematerialize and then rematerialize somewhere else. What if they get me scrambled and my head's coming off my butt? That wouldn't be so good. Hi, Ginger. Good to have you here. Unmute yourself. Say hi. I don't see your picture, but I see your name. Unmute. It's not letting me unmute. Sometimes it doesn't let me unmute. There she is. Hi. Say hi, Ginger. How you doing?
I'm good.
Good. All right. Do you have any questions for us? Any things you want to discuss? Any, you know, want to solve the world's problems? We're trying to solve the world's problems here.
Oh, I wish. A vaccine, they keep saying, would be awesome, but it's got to be something better.
Oh, yeah. It's called an immune system. It's called empowered self-care. It's called taking care of yourself and thinking positive thoughts. Don't get caught up in the crap all over the internet and the news that's gloom and doom and puts us into a state of altered immunity, you know, and the foods and the thoughts and all that kind of stuff makes a huge difference.
And the irony is our immune system, from all of the data, our immune system is more than 99% efficient, and no vaccine can ever get to that rate of efficiency.
Right. And here's the thing, right? They talk vaccine. And then they say in the same breath, well, we don't know if you got it once, if you can get it again. I'm like, excuse me? And you're putting millions and billions of dollars into a vaccine. Vaccine is based on the premise that you build immunity. And once you have the antibodies, you don't get it again. So tell me why you're duping everybody into thinking a vaccine is going to work when you can't even say for certain that if you get it once, you can't get it again. Right? We got my son tested for antibodies because he's been kind of wandering around a lot, and he's my only point of exposure to the outside world. So he hasn't been sick in the last 6 months, but he was really sick in end of November or middle of November. And he usually doesn't get sick, but he had a really bad flu, like really, really bad. And we thought, well, maybe it was COVID hitting early. Who knows? Anyway, we got his antibodies tested. Vibrant America has a test, and they do 3 different antibodies, G and M. And then they do 3 or 4 different parts of the virus, supposedly. So it's supposed to be a little bit more accurate than just the ones that do single. But he was negative. So he was like, I wish it was positive. Then I could feel a little bit confident that maybe I'm, you know, because he's got his apartment to go, his lease is up at the end of this month, and he's looking for another place to live. And I said, well, you have here, you can come and stay with us, you know, until you find a place. I said, but before you do, we want you to get tested. And he goes, yeah, and then I have to quarantine. I can't just go and hang out. I'm like, no, I'm going to go find another place. 22, that's the way they are. So, yeah, but the immune system is really, really important. I mean, when you look at that, you know, when I teach it and I go with the B cells and the antigen presenting cells and the memories and all this kind of stuff that it has to do, and then we're going to try to fake it out by shoving this antigen, this part of this viral piece that in through the bloodstream, not even allowing it to filter through the mucous membranes that this beautiful body has been blessed with to filter it, like you're sticking it right into the bloodstream along with aluminum and mercury and wondering why people might get sick from it. So anyway, people are barking up the wrong tree, I think, and looking for that.
Well, my big concern is that they're talking about targeting African Americans first.
Yeah, right? As if you don't have enough on your plate.
Yeah, like, okay, you haven't had enough testing in all the African nations and all the Indian nations, so now you want to just jump on us here in the U.S.?
Yeah, well, because you have the higher rate of infection, so we might as well. It's an altruistic standpoint, right? Because we want to help you first.
And ironically, the test thing that they're doing is on quote unquote healthy people. It's not on people who are compromised.
That's right. And so healthy people can withstand lots of stuff, right? Healthy people most likely have pretty decent immune function and detox pathways. And they're the people who, you know, they're not the canaries in the coal mine. You got to give it to the canaries in the coal mine. And then that's bad. I mean, that's, you know, you can't do that, right? From a moralistic standpoint. But then if you don't, then you don't know how the canaries are going to react. And that's really what we need to know. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy. But we have to do what we do. We have to, education is huge. People need to be educated. And right now, I really believe that's what we talked about at Shine Online, that now is the time. People are more open to hearing what we have to say because they're scared and they're not hearing anything that's putting them into feeling safe from the powers that be. Right. And we can talk some sense. And like, okay, vitamin C, you go try to buy some Perk vitamin C anywhere. It's out of stock everywhere because people are buying it by the droves, right? Liposomal C, it's hard to find because people are getting wind that vitamin C is important and they're just buying it out. So they're listening, right? They're listening. I even have family members asking me about what, you know, what do you put in your little your immune concoction? And they go, oh, you want to hear? You really want to know? Okay, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, so they're ready.
And, you know, I even have clients who finally their partners are saying, huh, call Michelle. And before they didn't want to have anything.
They didn't want anything to do.
Like,
right?
A crazy nut.
Right?
And unfortunately, with one person, his wife's father went into the hospital. When he originally went in, he was COVID free. Then he came out, stayed at home for like one day, went back in. All of a sudden, he has COVID. And then he just died this morning.
Aww.
And well, what his wife was able to acknowledge was that he had significant issues long before.
Yeah.
You know, of course they're going to put COVID on the death certificate, I'm sure. But she said, you know, he had a lot of respiratory issues and she didn't realize how far gone his process was. And now she says, now I need to look at my own health. And before this, she didn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that this will be the wake up call for a lot of people to start asking questions at least.
I think it is. And I think we have to stir the questions on though. That's where, you know, get on Facebook Lives. I'm going on once a week. I could probably do it more, but for now I'm just doing once a week and just having those conversations with people, opening up the conversations, opening up the thought processes and letting them know that they are in control. Empowered self-care is the healthcare of the future. Teaching people how to understand how the body works and be empowered to make the choices and to question everything out there. Because they don't know what they're talking about. When they do stupid things like stick pellets, estrogen pellets in people and tell them it's good for 6 months. And, you know, they go in and say, we'll cut out your thyroid because there's got some nodules on it. Or let's do a hysterectomy because you've got fibroids. That's not taking care because it's not looking at root cause. Yes, sometimes you do have to have the surgery while you're working on the root cause so the root cause doesn't kill another part of your body.
No. How do you do the Facebook Lives? Do you announce it ahead of time or do you just pop up?
Sometimes I just pop in. Lately, we found a way that you can go in and you can actually schedule one. So there's some way that you go in and you click live and you say schedule and then you let people know and then they can click notify me. When they first started doing Facebook Lives, anybody that was in your group or on your page got this notification. It was the best thing in the world because everybody got notified and they'd show up in droves.
Yes, they changed.
Doesn't happen anymore. Yeah, they changed that.
All body now.
Yeah. So if you do them in groups, you know, you have to build a group, but in the group, they're more likely to get it. But if you schedule it in advance and say, notify me. And then when we remember to do it, we don't always, we'll send an email out that says, hey, I'm going to go live at, you know, 5 o'clock today. Come join us and click the link here.
I think I'll start doing that. Actually.
Just get out there, even 10 minutes, 15 minutes, right? Just to really just have your face be seen, have your voice be heard, put some doubts in people's minds. If anything else, you think about what can I get people to start questioning today?
Masks. I had a funny. So I was going into the bank because I needed to create an account for my son. So my son says, "Mom, we don't have masks." I was like, "Shut up. We're all sick." I said, "Just tell them you have a medical exemption." And he's like, "Well, what's the medical exemption?" I was like, "Well, you're crazy and I've got respiratory issues." And we literally had to go to 5 different banks before I could find a bank that was open without stupid appointments. And I just walked in. Nobody asked me a question. I didn't volunteer an answer. Did what I needed to do and called it a day.
Yeah. So what I would recommend when you get out there with the issues that are controversial, be neutral and informative. Like if you have a strong opinion, they don't have that opinion, they're going to run away. Mm-hmm. But if you want them to question certain things, then don't be anti it. Go in with an educational, this is the story with this, did you know that? Mm-hmm. Because it's the people that are being like, you know, really strong and they're alienating folks. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do.
I ask them the question. I start with the question, how is your breathing? And inevitably people will tell me, yeah, I've found that it's harder for me to breathe. Mm-hmm. And then I ask, well, how do you think that's affecting the rest of your body? And so then we start talking about oxygenation and we talk about how it affects all the different areas, how the increase in carbon dioxide starts to trigger the cortisol, starts to trigger that sympathetic response of, you know, there's some urgent danger here. And then we talk about the lowering of oxygen, how that affects the body when you're not getting sufficient oxygen. So we enter into all of those different conversations, you know, because for me, it actually is a real issue because my iron levels are extremely low. Mm-hmm. And I've been working on that. And at the same time, I recognize that I cannot afford to compromise my breathing. I mean, but
that assumes that you're going to be wearing a mask for a continued length of time. So for example, if you, like I'm not anti-mask and I'm really pro mask for an extent. Okay. If I sneeze and I don't have anything covering me, mm-hmm. those droplets can be found to go about 8 feet. Mm-hmm. If I just put this washcloth over my mouth and I sneeze, it's going to go this much. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's going to protect other people if I'm a carrier of anything at all, whether it's COVID mm-hmm. or something else. And if somebody is compromised and I just have some kind of, you know, respiratory thing or whatever, and they get that, they may be compromised and then they're weakened to something else. So mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of people covering. Personally, mm-hmm. I don't do it because I don't go out. Mm-hmm. I just go running and I'm not wearing a mask when I run, no matter, mm-hmm. you know, what, but I go running. That's it. So, but if I'm around other people, I wouldn't use this heavy washcloth because it's mm-hmm. kind of ridiculous, but I would put covering over my mouth. And I think it can be helpful, but I can understand that somebody is a worker in an environment and you're having to wear a mask for 8 hours and you have any kind of respiratory impairment, that's dangerous. Right. So it's a controversial issue because what do you do, right? If you're a hairdresser and somebody comes in and they're not wearing a mask and they are infected and you're right up in their face, you're increasing your risk, which is increasing your family's risk. You know, so a friend of mine is an ultrasound tech and she actually is scanning COVID patients like several a day. And of course she's in that environment. So she's got the medical mask and suit and the whole bit, but it's scary for her, right? She goes home every day to her family and she knows she's been exposed to these people. How well does her equipment work? And you know, she has to do all this crazy stuff. Like she strips at the doorway. She throws everything in a plastic bag. She goes and dumps it, she takes a shower first, hot shower. And then she takes the bag, throws it in the washing machine. I mean, it's a crazy way to live, but she's exposed and she doesn't want to expose her family. So there's a lot, you know, there's a lot that can go both ways. Yeah, I totally understand that some people just, it's not a good thing. But on the other hand, if people are compromised, you don't want to run the risk of infecting them, whether it's with COVID or, mm-hmm. you know, the typical.
Well, you know, that's like in Japan, it's customary if you know that you have some kind of whatever, mm-hmm. then you wear a mask. And that has been since the beginning of time. It had nothing to do with COVID.
Right.
But, you know, most of the people running around, that's not the situation. And they're being told that it's going to protect them. But virus particles can go through that kind of issue. So there are just a lot of different issues that.
Yeah, and we don't know.
I mean, and then, you know, what I tell people, if you have a compromised system, stay at home, plain and
exactly.
simple, stay at home. Yeah. But, you know, the economy has to go on because the fallout from this is tremendous. And the economic fallout that is going to lead to a lot of disparities, especially in communities such as African-American community, we can't afford that. And that's what people are not acknowledging. And the deaths that are going to be as a result of this.
With suicides and the trauma to our
children. The trauma to our children and the fact that our children are becoming even further and further behind academically, which of course impacts their ability to sustain the national security as we go forward. And
I know it's a really tough situation we're all in because there's no good solution at this point.
And well, the reality is that viruses have been here since the beginning of time and they'll be here long after us. And after COVID-19, what we're going to have? COVID-2020, we're going to have COVID-21 and the Scooby-Doo virus. There's always going to be something.
There is.
And ironically, the death rate of COVID is extremely low when you look at it in comparison to all of these other viruses that have been in our society in previous years, and yet we didn't lock down then. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but I've got to go, guys.
All right. Well, good to see you.
Bye.
Bye. Hello, Angelica.
Hi. I just got back from my exercise. I'm late. Oh,
good. It's good to. How's the weather out there?
Oh, so dry. So dry. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I just drink like 6 quarts of water a day or more. It's just insane. So I'm really looking at my
and your
like
skin
salt.
And your hair gets dry too, see?
All of it. But I feel like I'm just drying up from the inside. Like if you've ever had just intense thirst, I'm thinking I should try some of that restructuring of water that you share with our clients and that, you know,
yeah, but it, if it does, you know. But I mean, seriously, when you're out in a hot, dry environment, you're sweating away, but you don't even know you're sweating. At least here, I know I'm sweating. I come back from running and I'm literally, I made a puddle. I got back really close to an appointment and I had to get on the appointment right away. And I'm standing there talking to somebody and I'm like looking down. I had a puddle on the a puddle. Like, oh, I think she couldn't, you know, get a whiff. I mean, I didn't smell bad, but I was wet. So, you know you're sweating when you're here, but the problem in the dry environments is you don't even know you're sweating. You just sweat and it evaporates right away. So, yeah. So you just have to drink more and more. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to try some of the, I don't know, restructuring of water techniques, maybe put some crystals in it or something. And I might, or then if that doesn't work, I'll consider some rehydration drops to see if that helps.
There's a cool little thing. I just don't use it. I bought it ages ago. It's a little thing with crystals in it. And it's a wand and you put it in your water and you spin it around. I don't know. I mean, it's supposed to work, but it could be voodoo, but it could be placebo. It could be whatever, but.
I'll try anything. Yeah, I do have a question though about things. Okay, cool. So I actually went away over the weekend for a retreat that was about foraging, and so I ate some stuff that I'm not used to eating. Mainly like hyperglycemic things. Like it was all natural sugar, but still I ate some hyperglycemic things. And you know what I've noticed about myself is that like it's not like I'm hungrier after eating that, but if I eat enough of that stuff, it's almost like the cravings are just like out of control, like full on mind control. Like, this isn't me. This isn't even the food I normally crave. And I'm just like, so I've been eating keto again for 2 days and I'm just like, wow, like the cravings are out of control. Like wanting me to eat all kinds of, a lot of just everything.
It's tough. And some of it is physiologic, right? Because it triggers, the insulin starts to go up, and that high insulin then, you know, puts you back into the need more carbs zone, and you go a little nutty with it. And I find the same thing. If I eat, oh, I'm just going to have a little bite of sweet potato with my whatever. Oh yeah, I'm going to have more sweet potato. Give me some more sweet potato. How about a date? You know, it just, it compounds, right? And then there's the mind piece that is that, ooh, sugar, sweet, ooh, nice, you know? And then you want more. Yeah. It's interesting.
So is that a permanent thing? Is that a permanent condition? Like, I was wondering if there's maybe a microbiome shift as well.
I would say I haven't lost it. I haven't lost that tendency. I put it under control, but sometimes not so much. And I don't eat anything really high glycemic anymore for that reason. Because I've been eyeing the blueberries in the fridge for the last few days. And I'm like, oh, I'll go try them. Oh, but I can't risk wanting to eat all day long, you know? Because I really like that feeling of not caring about food. Oh, yeah, I'm hungry, but who cares about food? Versus it happens when I don't sleep enough too. So you might notice it. So I really do think it's the insulin resistance and, you know, high levels of insulin. Because if I don't sleep for a few days in a row, boy, all bets are off. I just want to eat all day long. Whereas if I'm sleeping and everything's good, I go 24 hours without eating, just noticing the little emptiness, and who cares, right? Yeah.
Right. That's how I've become since being keto, but that was just crazy. Like, it's just crazy. I'm like, this isn't me. This isn't even my appetite. Like,
and it could be critters, right? You could awaken some, because you've been struggling with the candida stuff and, you know, some gut dysbiosis for a while. So it could be that it triggered that, and they're going, ooh, she's feeding us again. We want more. Hello.
That's kind of what it feels like. So anyway, like, not to be all eating disorder or anything, but after 2 days of being keto again, and I can still feel the cravings, I'm like, I feel like I should have a short little fast just to.
Yeah.
Just
and to do kinda... what's right for you. Don't try to go like, you know, if 24 or 18 or whatever length of time it is, and it'll be hard to do a fast, even if it's a length you've already done after you've gone that way. So, you know, be kind to yourself. Just go to 14 hours and go to 16 hours, and, you know, because it is harder. It's like, oh, forget the stupid fast. I don't want to do a fast today, right? I'm just going to eat because I feel like it, right? And it's getting over the other end of that, you know, it takes a little doing, which is why I really don't give into it, because I know the challenge of coming back from it.
Crazy. It's craziness. And I see people around me all eating this food, and I'm like, God, I wonder if other people have such intense cravings. You know, I really wonder.
Some do and some don't, you know. There's people who just eat a half a bowl of ice cream and push it aside. I always wondered about people like that when I was a kid.
I'm not one of them.
Can I finish that for you? Like, how did you put ice cream away? Well, I'm not hungry anymore. What does hunger have to do with it? It's ice cream.
So that just, wow, that was a big that opened my eyes. Yeah, that was a big aha. And it changes my moods as well, very much so. And I noticed that last time I let myself have some sugar when I was in Europe, like over the holidays, and I was like, oh wow, God, the mood goes really low. Like, no, I'm not gonna do that again. So
watch my videos that I did for Sweet Spot. The second one was on that whole thing, the neurophysiology of cravings, of sugar cravings. And I talked about that and effects on serotonin and dopamine receptors and all that.
Mm. Yeah. So,
yeah.
So that's where I'm at today.
Good luck.
Just living through it all so I can, you know, help people. That's how I look at things. I'm like, every challenge, I'm just like,
it's the stuff you have to go through so you can help people to go through it. And that's, I'm grateful for the things I've had to go through because I can help people go through it. But I would say, you know, really, really nourish yourself with a lot of greens, because the greens will create that mineral balance that can take some of that away. Like, we tend to, I don't know about you, but I tend to, if I get super hungry, it's like I'm looking for those dense foods.
Yeah.
And it's like, give me some nuts and give me some nut butter and give me some olives and, you know, give me an avocado. But then if I actually sit down and really just sit there with a big bowl of greens with maybe a little, you know, tahini sauce on it, a big bowl of greens, it's the mineral content that balances it. And I went through this when my kids were little. And, you know, when the kids are little, you set out a bowl to eat and you think you ate lunch, but then you got interrupted and you're like, why am I still hungry? I had that big lunch. And then you walk past the kitchen table and go, oh, I didn't actually finish that big lunch, right? So it's like still sitting there. No wonder I'm hungry. And I would say, oh, just let me have some nut butter. Or let me have a cracker or whatever it was to fill. You know, wouldn't fill. And finally I go, I'm not getting full. I'm eating all these calories. And I'm like, I'm just going to have some broccoli because I haven't had greens. And just one bowl of broccoli, done. So now it's like, okay, if I have those cravings, let me start with green. Let me start with something heavily green and mineralized. And then I can go to something heavier after that to, you know, fill the calorie gap, right? Or the fat. Yeah.
Good idea. Yeah. And here's the funny thing. This, I feel it's almost shameful talking about it, but it's like when I get in this weird, cravey place, I don't even want the greens. It's like, I'm like,
yeah,
greens, like what's that? And usually when I eat my normal diet, I'm like, that's all I crave is like steamed vegetables and greens. It's weird. I feel like a demon's living inside.
Well, make yourself a huge bowl of broccoli and steamed kale or whatever else, and you'll be surprised. And, you know, put a little something on it to don't make yourself eat it if it's unpalatable, but, you know, you can put a little olive oil on it if you want. I know you don't normally do oil, but make tahini dressing or something to make it like really tasty. And you'll find that the green just mineralizes you in such a way that you don't feel the craving as much.
Mm. Yeah, that sounds really good. Yeah, maybe I'll try a green juice next.
There you go. But go slowly on the green juice because too fast will raise your sugar too much.
Yeah. Well, actually, I checked the sugar today and I was kind of scared. I was like, oh, I don't want to look at it after this big glycemic thing over the weekend, but it was fine. I was like, hallelujah, it's fine.
Good. Good.
Yeah. So I guess those months of keto, I guess it's paying off.
That's the thing. It doesn't take as long to come back when you've been doing something long enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. Adventures in sugar metabolism. Oh boy.
Adventures in health. I mean, and just the ventures we do with ourselves and what we learn to be able to share with other folks is really, it's very valuable.
Yes, it is.
So I see Sammy just joined us. Hi, Sammy. I thought you had a dentist appointment. Maybe she can't talk because she had a dentist appointment. I'm just listening. All right. Anything else?
Anybody? If you have time, I have something I'd like to run by you.
Sure.
I got an email forwarded through my husband. His cousin contacted him. And I'm not even sure what her age is, actually. But she's asking for help. And I don't know her.
She says she's asking her help. Did she say she knows that her cousin has this wacky wife that does this nutrition stuff and she wants help? Or is she just like reaching out, grasping and saying, somebody help me?
He may have said something to her. He may have been talking. I don't know. He doesn't give me a lot of details.
Okay.
but he did forward this email and she said that in March of 2018, she had a slow stroke over a 72-hour period. Lost most of the use of the right side of her body, still lacks fine motor skills in the right hand, but she can chew and swallow with no problem now. Severe exhaustion after a lot of activity, which for her is vacuuming her 950 square foot apartment. After that, she needs a nap. She averages 10 to 12 hours of sleep every 24 hours, and she's on a bunch of stuff. Crestor, amlodipine, citalopram, Clopidogrel. I'm not familiar with all of these. Buspar and Chantix. So I guess she's a smoker. I did not have high blood pressure before the stroke, but will have it forever now. Left ankle swells if I walk around much. Both ankles swell if I drink Gatorade. A1C is 5.6 to 6.1 with a fasting glucose of 107. Neurologist wants me to have a diet that is more plant-based. My PCP feels I need 80 milligrams of protein. She probably means grams.
Grams, yeah.
I drink Premier Protein to help achieve that goal. Weight has soared. I'm between 190 and 200, 5'7" tall. She just started the Grow Young for a Realistic Exercise program, has a pool and a gym in her apartment complex. And she says, please let me know what you think. I'll try anything to reduce the meds, avoid diabetes, and lose 50 pounds. So she's got some information. She's
got some information, and she's got a doctor that told her to do more plant-based, which is good.
Yeah. How do you figure out the protein grams needed?
Yeah,
I wasn't sure.
Formula. If you're super athletic, I mean, there's a formula that you go a certain point. So depending on your activity level, so it's
which for her is pretty low.
Right. So she probably doesn't need 80 grams of protein. Right. She probably needs more like 45 or 50. Okay. But it's like point. I think it's for the average sedentary person, it's 0.8. per kilo, and then it goes up from there.
Okay.
And a kilo is a pound is 2.2 kilo, or 2.2 kilo is a pound, right? So yeah, so your weight, if you're 100 pounds in kilo, would be like 47 or something like that kilos. So she would really, you know, if she's 190 pounds, and it also goes by lean body mass rather than body mass, but most people don't know that. So they just kind of leave it at 0.8. So if you look at 0.8 per kilo, and she's like 190, let's say she's 200 pounds, that's 100 kilos, 0.8 would be about 80. So that's how we probably calculated it.
Okay.
Right. But realistically, she's probably 35% fat. 40% fat. So, you know, so even if she shoots for 80, it's, and especially if she's getting it from a plant-based powder, that's fine, you know. But the problem is, I mean, I would look at this and reach out and say, hey, I could love to talk to you through and talk her through a sweet spot type of a diet, right? Yeah. Talk her through getting a glucose meter and keeping it under control, and talk about what she could be eating. You can get an A1C down from 6.1 to 5.1 within several months. We see it all the time. You can get a fasting glucose. 107, that's nothing compared to most of our people in our sweet spot program who go from like 180 to 100 or 90 even within several weeks. So you can make major changes, which is going to affect her cardiovascular system, which is going to affect the lining, you know, the stiffness of the lining of her blood vessels dramatically. So you know how to do it. And you can do it very simply by just taking her through a sweet spot type diet.
Yeah. All those drugs make me a little nervous.
Yeah. But you know what? You don't address the drugs. You address that. Right. Let's tell your doctor you're working on your diet and that you want to be checked, and never let somebody who's on any anti-diabetic drugs, and I don't know, none of those sounded like they were anti-diabetic drugs, but somebody's on anti-diabetic drugs, insulin or metformin or any of those, you never let their fasting glucose go below 80 before they go consult with their doctor. Like where everybody, oh, wow, your blood sugar is 80. You get them into their doctor to lower their dose, right? Because it's too quickly can slip into too low,
right?
And that's the thing. And if they're on blood pressure medication, same thing. You have them check. And I remember I've done this with people before. I'm like, if you start to get dizzy or woozy or lightheaded, you stand up and you feel like you're going to faint, you've got to get your blood pressure checked. I recommend anybody who's on any kind of blood pressure medication to have their own blood pressure cuff and be testing it. And as soon as it starts to go down, they go talk to their doctor about lowering their dose. That's the biggest danger you get into. You know, because you're changing their diet in such a way that it's going to drastically change their metabolism.
Right.
Well, if you start to get into weird herbs and supplements and all that kind of stuff, you do have to carefully check the herb-drug interactions and things like that. But a lot of those drugs, if you reach out to Mihaela, she might be able to point you in the direction of what nutrients those drugs are going to interfere with, so you know what to actually help them eat more of or take supplements of.
good idea. I'm a little nervous about talking to her because, well, like I said, I don't know her. His family has always rejected me from before they ever met me. So I'm a little nervous dealing with any of them, but she's not one of them. So,
well, she reached out, and you can't, if you were to not talk to her because of your own fears and, you know, in securities, then you're depriving her of help that she may not be able to get anywhere else.
Yeah, I intend to try and just kind of play it by ear, see how it goes. And
reach out to me and say, I got your note. I would love to help you. I have some ideas. Do you want to set up a time to talk?
Yeah. Yeah. And then that opens up the whole horrible can of worms for me about charging. So I'm just not even ready to deal with that yet. So.
And don't.
Yeah. I think I'll just start and see.
Start working with her. And then she says, you know, if she has money and she's not like destitute, and she says, hey, you know, what can I pay you for it? You can say, well, you know, my normal rate is, and you throw something out there, but I can, you know, I can certainly, since your family, we can do a family rate. Mm-hmm. And just put it out there. And some people who are, they want your help and they value you, they'll just say, no, whatever your normal rate is, I'm going to pay you.
Okay.
But always offer that, like coming from a place of, you know, so since you asked your family, so I don't, you know, feel good about charging you. But on the other hand, you can say, I find that most people, if they're paying a little bit, they're going to follow better because you're invested. So what would be comfortable for you to pay so you feel like you're invested and that we're, you know, we're in a good exchange. You can do it that way too. Getting experience is invaluable.
Yeah. I suspect my husband was talking with her and he brought it up because he had a friend who goes sailing with him, and the guy decided he was too fat to go sailing now. And he's put on quite a bit of weight in the last year. He weighs 320 pounds now. And he told my husband that he says, you know, I don't know what we're going to do. We're all overweight. And we've tried everything, you know, that whole thing. And so, of course, Todd starts talking me up. And he goes, Val can help you, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he was really talking him up. So they texted back and forth on that. And he ended up going, oh, Todd, we got this. We're okay. Yeah, that's what I keep running into, which is why I had gotten so frustrated with even trying to help anybody. So,
well, it's tough helping friends and family members. It really is, because you do have that weirdness of charging, right?
Yeah.
I've had friends who they kind of take advantage and then they don't follow up. So I invest all this time and do a full consultation and I'm not charging them. And I'll, you know, say, okay, well, I won't charge you, but I really want you to follow through and give me a really good testimonial. And then they, you know, they get tired of it, right? But if they've paid you a lot of money and they don't like what you're saying because they know they have to work, they're more likely to follow through if they paid a lot of money to have that advice, right? Because they don't feel like they want to waste it. Not everybody. There's people who pay you. I've had people pay me lots of money and then not do anything with it. Mm-hmm. You know, but for the most part, it's there. But friends and family are the hardest, really is. Really.
I'm going to give it a try.
Give it a try. She reached out. She's a distant enough family and she took the initiative.
Right? Yeah. And I'm telling myself, you know, no expectations, no strings attached. Don't be attached to the outcome. And I had a tendency to get too passionate about things. Yeah. And I think I've dialed it back quite a bit now. So my whole intention is to just listen, first of all.
Listen first, right? Seek first to understand.
And really acknowledge what's going on and gather some information. I'd like to get a diary, a food diary, and just kind of get a feel for what's going on. And then maybe I can find some easy things that would be the first steps.
Exactly. And the thing you really need to find out from people, no matter what the relationship is, if you're going to work with them, is their commitment level. Like, are there things that you are unwilling to do regardless of the health implications?
Yeah, well, she sounds committed because she says, I'll try anything to reduce the meds, avoid diabetes, and lose 50 pounds. So that's a commitment.
And I think you can help her with all that. and start from the beginning. You know, it takes there's no easy answer. You already know that because I can tell that based on what you said. And it's going to take some shifting and retooling and changing some habits, but I think you can do this. She can.
Is it true that once, because of her stroke, it's given her high blood pressure that she can't get rid of? Is that, I'm totally unfamiliar with that.
Not that I know of. I can't even think of a mechanism by which that would be true. It's true if you're a medical doctor who deals with stroke victims, because you don't know anything about getting to the root cause. You don't have anything for them. You just put them on medication, and it could be that it's side effects of some of the medications is gaining weight.
True. And I'm guessing because she talks about both ankles swell if she drinks Gatorade, there's probably a sodium issue there.
Mm-hmm. And sugar, it's sugar too. So, mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I have an answer okay. to that one. That's an easy one. Don't drink Gatorade. Go find out, why is she drinking Gatorade? What does she think it's giving her?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she's probably not right now.
But she's not an athlete. So, right, what is your reason for drinking Gatorade if you're not an athlete trying to replenish or, you know, fuel up before an event?
Right.
There's, you know, it's always that why question that's so important. Like asking them, why did they start doing something? Why are they doing something? Why are they unwilling to do something? Why? And then it's asking the body why, not just their behavioral whys, but the body. Okay, so why did the uterus stop working properly? Oh, wow. Why did the gut, you know, why was her gut a mess? Why? And you go backwards and it, you know, maybe that she was on birth control pills for 40 years and it created some tension in her system because it's known to cause thrombosis from being on birth control pills for a long time, right? So, and that also disrupts gut flora, right? So it makes dysbiosis. It also disrupts B vitamins. So it also disrupts vitamin C. It also, you know what I'm saying? So we want to just keep going backwards. When did this start? And let's think, why would that happen? Why would she have, was there a mold exposure? Was there a travel exposure? Did you repaint the house and not ventilate properly? Like all of those questions in the module 3, which is all the history taking. I didn't put together that module just to keep myself busy one day. It's really important stuff that a lot of folks, even when they've been in practice for a long time, forget to ask. The timeline is so, so important. What led to this? What led to that? What led to the other thing?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Who else? Ginger, anything? Sammy, anything? Otherwise, I'll go and get some little break before my next appointment. I have one more appointment tonight at 8:00. So, anybody?
I have one more quick one. Yeah. I'm about to finish up a package with one of my clients, and I'm getting a sense from our last session, which was yesterday. I'm going to have like a 30-minute like reassessment phone call with her in a few weeks. But like, I was getting the sense that she maybe didn't like the kind of results we were getting because I'm taking her through proper like diet overhaul. And she really what came to me because she wanted to get rid of skin fungus. And so I'm wondering what would be some like good questions to ask to get her honest feedback. Because she's also one of those people that tends to be really nice and maybe doesn't mm-hmm. always say the full what she really feels. I'm wondering what would be some key questions to ask about, like, you know, kind of where, you know, what do you wish was different, or like, you know, how could this experience, how could it have been better for you?
Okay, those are good. Actually, something very similar to that could be good. So did she get any help with the skin fungus? Has it improved?
No, I didn't even, I've been helping her with diet because it's been such a process of getting her diet like cleaned up and movement and water. Like I've been working on the basics, like doing what I thought was the right thing.
Yes, so sometimes I'm just going to give you a little, I'm a big root cause person, but sometimes we need to give them a symptoms thing while you're working on root cause. So if it is a skin fungus, is it between her toes? Is it, where is it?
It's all over her skin.
It's all over. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so that would be a systemic kind of thing. So working on the gut is really important.
Right.
you might have take some topical antifungal type things and have her try it on a small area. If it's all over, you just try it on an area and you know, she'll notice if there's a difference, and then she'll know to try it more over. So something like tea tree oil or a calendula, which is real soothing with a little tea tree oil mixed in with it. Or, you know, just play around with some of that, maybe a homeopathic kind of antifungal cream. And then if you're working on systemic stuff and diet, are you also working on things that are systemically antifungal?
You mean like something that could actually attack the fungus directly?
Yeah.
I haven't given her any of that yet. I could give her some places to start with in the last session. I guess I was just, you know what I was nervous about? I was nervous about like going and attacking the fungus without like making the terrain, improving the terrain. Yeah, you know, I didn't want to set up her expectations that, hey, we're going to kick this thing.
But really like not. It, right. No. Know? I think it's really important to do what you're doing, but also to kind of not ignore the chief thing that brought them in. So if you asked her, what do you do to address this? I'd say, hey, you know, I've noticed we've been working together for what, 2 months, a month, what, however long. Yeah. And you know, you're not noticing much of a difference in your skin. And I just want to address that point out that sometimes, you know, there's so many underlying things going on. We want to address the root cause. But if there was something, I mean, I don't have a magic thing to give you to just address it, but there are some things we can do to address some of the symptoms and see if we can get some symptom relief while we're working on the root cause. Is that something you'd be interested in? Mm-hmm. Don't assume she would be interested in it, but ask her if it's something she would be interested in. But I would address it, you know, because she came in with a specific issue and you want to make sure she knows that you're not ignoring that issue, but what your experience and what you're learning is that you've got to address the terrain before you can just go and try to kill things off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm in the position right now where I'm like, okay, I have like a reassessment session with her. I'm wondering how to navigate it so that I can get her honest, you know, feedback if she wants to continue. And I want to give her some confidence too, that we're going to be starting to actually give her some results and change. I mean, she does feel better because she's made big changes for her diet.
So you say you were focused on that. So when you came in, you had energy level that was like you rated 4 out of 10. Where would you rate your energy level now? Oh, it's like a 9 out of 10. Oh, before when you came in, you were having headaches every 2 weeks. How often do you have headaches now? I'm just making this up. I don't know what her symptoms were. But before you, and really look at those symptoms. That's why I like to do some of those symptom surveys and look at them again. And then say, look, you know, we've been working on stage one, which is really helping you to reestablish a good terrain. The next step that I want to work into with you is to really address, you know, some of this fungal stuff and see where it is systemically and topically, and along with the terrain stuff, how can we help you to address that directly? Like that, when you say it that way, it's like, this was a plan. Now we're in stage one. Now we're moving to stage two. Mm-hmm. And then you make it real exciting what you're going to do with her in stage two. So she goes, okay, yeah, I'm ready for stage two. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm. And what questions should I ask her though, if I really want her to feel heard about the experience? Because like I said, I'm kind of reading between the lines and I'm feeling like, you know, she didn't get the quick results she was looking for. So I would love to like,
I would address that. I would say, you know, you came in with this fungal thing on your skin and quite frankly, I don't think it's improved all that much. What are your thoughts? Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, well, maybe it's a little less itchy and, you know, whatever. And so I just want you to know I didn't ignore it. You know, it's just really, I want to establish the terrain. So overall, I want to address what other things have improved. And sometimes we have to improve from the inside out versus the outside in. And, you know, so that's how I would address it. And just have an open discussion about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Good luck. All right. Anything else before we go? Helpful? We covered a lot of ground between Michelle's stuff at the beginning and yeah. Great. All right. You guys have a great rest of the day. Hopefully, Sammy, I'll see you on Thursday at our Practice Accelerator call. And the rest of you, I don't know. I don't have my schedule in front of me. So I'm just going to go.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.
Have a good
one. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.